All right, Big Bang, today is Friday, July 24th. Welcome to the Dog Walk presented by Barstool Sports. We have another True Crime Friday for you here. We're back with Chief. Chief, how's it going? Thanks again for filling in. It looks like we're close to finding a person.
There you go.
So I'm going to miss you on these, though.
Yeah, I'm always available. You let me know. I live like a 30-second walk away now. So
that's good. Yeah, mm-hmm. you're the first guy off the bench, always. Mm-hmm. Always. So before we get into today's topic, today's True Crime case, we want to talk about JP Grazianos, Chief. It's about to be the weekend, okay? Mm-hmm. So you've frequented those bars over there in the West Loop.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, it's just a great idea to just grab a sandwich before you go to the bar.
Oh, I mean, you fill up, get a little something in your stomach. That way you're safe about it. And now they got that walk-up window, too. It's so sweet. You can just pop right over there, grab a sandwich, hit those bars. It's the best way to do it. And yesterday was National Hot Dog Day. Did you know that? Or was it Wednesday?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I had White Sox Dave over. The first thing he did was take some of that JP Jardinier, put it on the hot dog. It's like the White Sox Dave-style dog. It was awesome.
Really?
So you can put that Jardinier or the muffalata on anything.
Some good bite to the mm-hmm. hot dog. I like that. So, yeah, if you go to Federale's or some shit on Saturday, just order your sub for 11:30. If you're meeting your friends at noon, order 11:30. Get a little sub action in there first. Pick it up, have mm-hmm. it outside, you know, whatever you want. Have it on the curb, whatever you want to do, and then go have a good time.
That's a perfect plan.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So go have it. And like Chief said, get some muffaletta, get some Jardinier. To get that, go to tastegirlschicago.com. And to get your sub, go to jpgraziano.com. 901 West Randolph, located in the heart of the West Loop. Go support JP Graziano. Okay, Chief. So today's topic is about the death of Ben Oxley.
The murder.
Correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I always forget to specify that.
This one we know.
Yeah.
There's no, you know, it's been effectively there. We'll get there, but they know what happened to him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think the natural spot to start here is there's a 36-year-old guy in Nevada.
Yep.
Seemed like a pretty, you know, pretty average guy. Like nothing really stuck out about him beforehand, like that they really dove into, at least that I found.
Exceptionally average.
Yes.
You know, like average looking, average height, just kind of a nondescript white guy living in Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
So
he was previously married.
Mm-hmm.
He had at least one kid, right?
He had one daughter. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then he ended up remarrying.
Correct.
And here's what kind of his start. He ended up remarrying February 20th, 2008. You got it.
Mm-hmm.
In the middle of the night.
Yep.
While he was just laying in his bed, his new wife, mm-hmm. woke up to the smell of gunpowder.
Yeah. So that, and his wife's name is Melissa. And that's what she said. I found that very odd. Because she said that she woke up, you know, she smells gunpowder in the air. She starts nudging her husband to be like, hey, like, do you smell that? And she's like, ah, you won't get up. I'm going to go check it out. And she describes this this night as she's like kind of, she feels like she might be dreaming. But she walks out of the bedroom into the hallway. And I guess the way their house is laid out, she can see to the foyer. And she could see like their front door was open. And it's mm-hmm. like, oh, fuck, like what just happened? So she walks back into the bedroom, flips on the light, and sees her dead husband.
So suspicious smell,
mm-hmm.
weird noise. She gets up. She sees an open door, dead in the night, remind you.
Yeah, this is 3 a.m.
Dead of the night.
Mm-hmm.
And you're, like you said, husband's all bloody.
Yeah.
Okay. Then there's also their daughter, well, her stepdaughter.
Yep.
Her stepdaughter's there named Alyssa, who's 6 years old,
mm-hmm.
and she's in the house.
Yeah, she's in her bedroom. And then also in the house was Melissa's younger brother, who was 15 at the time.
And that was not Ben's son.
Correct.
Okay. So he's a 15-year-old. And so they immediately freak out, you know, that she checks on all the kids. Everyone else is okay. It just seems to be the husband that's shot in the bed.
Yep. So she immediately, you know, she runs to the daughter's room, calls 911. The cops come over. And naturally, it's like, well, you better scoop up everybody in the house. And they've got a dead guy here. We're going to do a murder investigation. So they bring in the 6-year-old daughter, the wife, Melissa, and her brother, and his name's escaping me at the moment. But they do like a thorough search, and they're questioning all of them, including the little girl. And the little girl gives her name is Alyssa. She gives a statement saying, like, I remember hearing like a creak in the floor.
I saw a shadowy figure.
A shadowy figure in her doorway, but like couldn't identify like who it was. But just she heard something, she woke up. she kind of thought that she was dreaming too and went back to sleep. And that was kind of an odd thing because they had to wake up the brother. He didn't wake up from the gunshot. The wife woke up from a smell and not like this is, and we should just say it was birdshot. So, you know, like from a shotgun. So she had a shotgun blast, probably. They described the death as point blank, I don't know, maximum 8 feet from her.
Yeah.
And probably less, because otherwise you would think the way that birdshot and buckshot, shotgun shot, it sprays, right? Mm-hmm. So if the gunshot came from across the room, she would probably be hit by like some fragments. But she had no injuries herself, just she had her husband's blood on him. So they round up everybody and take him into the sheriff's department.
And naturally, it's so unbelievable to think that someone could sleep through someone getting fucking shot right next to them.
Right next to him.
It's crazy.
Right next to him.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about that. Mm-hmm. So the spotlight turned on her.
Yeah, and like rightfully so. Yes. That's the first place I would look. And this is something that, you know, we had the lawyer in here, was it 2 weeks ago?
Yes.
Bolotin, better call Bolotin, where he was talking about, you know, the presumption of innocence. Thank fucking God for that. Because if I was ever in charge, and not every country has that, like Italy doesn't. Remember that Amanda Knox?
Yeah.
Okay. She was just like thrown in jail to rot for, like, I think years while that case was going on. So they have like a guilty until you're proven innocent. Not innocent until proven guilty. So if you have a woman who can't remember seeing anyone, never saw anybody, shotgun blast to her husband's head, she has gunshot residue on her.
And blood.
And blood. And I would be like, well, string her up. This is open and shut. She clearly did it. But thankfully, because we have that presumption of innocence in America, she's allowed to, like, go through the whole process. And eventually, like, she does have her name kind of cleared.
Yeah. So yeah. They do their due diligence. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they're turning every rock. And the rock that they can't get away from her because she's so... How the fuck do you not wake up?
How did you not wake up? And they had to wake up the brother, and then they search his room, and they found the exact type of cartridge for a shotgun just sitting out on his dresser, being like, you have this birdshot for a shotgun right fucking here? And so they tested his hands for gunshot residue, and he was clean too. So he was...
No gunpowder, no nothing over him. Because that's immediately where I went. It's like, holy shit, he's got the same type of bullet in his room.
Guilty.
Yeah. But no.
Yeah.
So at this point, she gets cleared. She has a very heartbreaking kind of testimony about how it wasn't me. Like, I'm going through... I gotta imagine how awful that is. And I know, listen, I know you got to do it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, rightfully so, especially in this case, he was sleeping right next to him. But if you really didn't do it, you're being, you know, you're already going through trauma of losing someone.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to go, like, you got to talk about that. That's tough.
Oh, I can't even. And she's sobbing. She's like, I can't believe I'm getting blamed for my husband's death. And the police are like, well, you're not getting blamed. Like, we have to ask these questions. And
they also had motive too. So besides this, we didn't even talk about that. They found out there was a $400,000 life insurance policy.
So yeah, like that to me, and her and like she's been interviewed. We watched
Dateline
NBC, so we had some content to go off of. But she gave this interview. She was like, "Well, I knew if I didn't start dating now, I was never going to do it, and I'd just be a widow." And I was sitting there being like, "Yo, if I was shot in the face and murdered in my bed, sleeping next to you, grieve me a little bit longer. Just, you know, give it a year.
Yeah.
Give it a year, and then you can go out and date." But, yeah, so she was
dating shortly thereafter.
Yeah, so it was like, what the hell is going on here? So there was, like, a lot of reasons to be suspicious of her.
Mm-hmm.
And in my head, like I said, I had convicted her. She doesn't scream murderer when you watch her, but I was just like, there's too many things going on here. Like, she did it.
Yeah, and then I think the case just kind of almost fell into the lap of the police.
Yeah.
Because they really, they started to look into the ex-wife.
Mm-hmm. They looked into her right away, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they went down and, you know, she lives now. That's something that we should say, too, because the ex-wife and Ben, the guy who was murdered, had kind of a contentious relationship, to say the least, that ended in divorce.
Big custody battle.
Big custody battle. They said that he had cheated on her, which was part of the, you know, the part of the problem. She never got over it, and obviously, I don't think anybody really ever can. But she was very upset about that, and so like they get a divorce, and it got to the point where she was so like kind of broken, and now she had other traumas beforehand. It's not like she was like some perfect person, and then all of a sudden he cheats on her, and she goes down the dark path. But they did kind of make that distinction where she has a lot of problems with alcohol. She starts dating all over the place and not coming home at night. You know, she's at that point a single parent with, I think she had at least one other son in the house, and I think another daughter in addition to the 6-year-old that she had.
And she took over
with Ben
after Ben died, so she got custody back after mm-hmm. she lost it.
Right,
and it got to the point where she was spiraling so out of control that she couldn't feed or take care of these kids.
Like the kids would call like neighbors and friends, being like, "Hey, like I don't know where my mom is. I think she went out with some guy. We don't have any food in the house. Can you bring us some food?" So at that point, you know, Ben and his new wife, Melissa, had, you know, appealed to the court system to get full custody of the 6-year-old. So that, like, Ben didn't have any rights to the other children in the house, his ex-stepchildren, I guess they'd be. But he was able to get, and that's like a hard thing to do historically, is for a dad to win custody rights, full custody rights over a child against the mother. Like mm-hmm. It has to be extenuating circumstances, and court ruled in his favor. So she moved in full time with Ben and her stepmom, Melissa.
Mm-hmm. And then, so this family friend comes into the picture. That's mm-hmm. what he said at the beginning.
Yeah.
So did they ever establish if this guy, his name's James, are they dating or are they?
They're not banging.
Okay.
They're banging. So James, so now
I couldn't find that.
Yeah.
I
just, you know. Yeah. Yeah, okay. they're banging. And James even said as much.
Okay.
So James is 21 years old, and I know Ben was 36 when he died. So I'm not exactly actually sure how old Dawn was. Mm-hmm. So Dawn, the ex-wife, and James, they described him to the police initially as a, quote, family friend, but they were banging.
Yeah.
So that was like a romantic relationship. And, you know, James would say things like, "Hey, you know, like I didn't have a great relationship with my parents and my mother. And this was kind of like I felt like worthless, and she made me feel like kind of cared for and valued." And like that was the first time in my life I had ever felt anything like that from a woman or anyone else. So he looks like kind of like a meek kind of guy. And so that was their relationship. But they were like, when the police initially arrived at their house, he was in bed with her. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like they were dating.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and then, so like I said, she's spiraling.
Mm-hmm.
She ends up getting questioned again. I think she was in the police station, not in regards to that.
Yeah. Both James and, Dawn, a lot of run-ins with the police.
Yes.
So DUIs and, you know, some domestic disturbances and like petty theft. And James had been in jail previously.
And it was almost like the police, every time they got brought in for stuff like mm-hmm. that, DUIs, they'd always ask, like, "Hey," and then they'd keep denying it.
"Oh, by the way, did you kill that guy?"
Yes.
Yeah.
Like they kept putting the heat on, which was, you know, mm-hmm. rightfully, every time you got a chance, why not?
And James would, they had one, like a security footage of that interrogation, which was related to a DUI where they brought it up again like a year later. And James was like combative about it.
He's
"I'm looking you in the eye."
Like, he got aggressive.
He's like, and like leans forward in his chair, like kind of maybe a foot away, like, but you know, we'll call it nose to nose with the detective, being like, "I didn't do it. I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't know him. I didn't," you know, like very adamant that he had nothing to do with it.
Then at some point, Dawn finally cracks.
Now,
The ex-wife.
So the detective, the lead detective in the case, now it's been 2 years. He's like, you know, "We got no real leads on this." He's like, "I have suspicions." He kind of, in his head, makes it seem like he cleared Melissa, the wife. And but he was like, you know, this is about to go cold. And he's driving home and he gets a call from Dawn being like, "Hey, I gotta talk to you." So he drives over to her house and she gives a statement that James did it, which is fucking crazy. Yeah, after 2 years, she was hammered drunk,
And he was like, do you want me to go kill him? She's like, no, I don't want you to. No, no, no.
Right.
She cries a million times that she didn't want him to. He's like, well, I'm going to. And then she says she fell asleep again in her drunken stupor.
Yeah.
And then she woke up and he came back and he's like, he's dead.
Right. So it's done. I did it.
Yeah.
And so she was like, no, 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 no. Like, I can't believe this. And she's like having like a, she's stating to the detective like this, she's giving this story and she's like, I want to protect him. And so like, you know, but like, I can't live with this any longer. So she turns him in.
Oh, and we forgot that she was also granted, that's obviously a huge part. She was granted immunity.
Yeah. That was just going to say that. Sorry, so like that was part of the statement that, you know, in exchange for her cooperation against James, she was given, like a limited immunity. So that was part of the deal. And then, you know, and then there was other like kind of closed caption footage of James at like a 7-Eleven getting money out, things like that.
Very late, same night.
Same night, same, like, so the thinking is like he could go to 7-Eleven and then continue on up there. And she was not in the video. So story goes forward. They arrest James. James ends up pleading guilty. And, you know, he gives interviews about that night and what happened, and his recollection, or his story rather, is far different from Don's. Don's was basically like, hey, he did this on his own. I pleaded with him not to, as you said. His was like, she was like begging me to do it. Like, I want him dead. I want him dead. And she was like very distraught that she had lost custody of her daughter to him. And so that was the thing, like, you like, let's go get him. And James says that she was there the whole time. Like, yep. So like she was the shadowy figure that her daughter saw in the doorway, and she was driving the car, and like she went with him to, you know, they went to Walmart to get the shotgun shells, and you know, she didn't go in, James went in, but she stayed in the car and she was there the whole time because she had to let him in because James didn't know the layout of,
because that was the original plan, was they had a layout of the house. So he's like, all right, you're gonna go in, I'm gonna stay in the car, I'm just gonna be the driver. They pulled out, they forgot the blueprint. So they forgot the blueprint, so she's like, all right, I'll just take you in. They both go in through the sliding door, and when they do, she's like, oh, I'm gonna go take the daughter, I'm gonna go take the 6-year-old
that
daughter,
won't be
Alyssa.
Suspicious at all.
And the guy's like, what are you doing? We can't murder,
you're right,
and then take the, like, that's like the most obvious thing in the world.
Can I pause you for 1 second here?
Yeah.
Fuck sliding doors forever.
Dude,
first level sliding doors. We've been watching that other documentary about the California killer. We did an episode on him like maybe a month ago.
Yeah, Golden State Killer.
I, as God is my witness, I will never have a house with a first floor sliding door. That's how you get murdered. 100 As far as I'm concerned, 100% of the time you get murdered is because you had a sliding glass door.
You're not lying. The sliding glass door seemed to be,
that's a problem,
a big key.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so then, essentially, then he says he heard someone, he heard, you know, fidgeting around in, like, the other side of the house. He freaked out. He shot Ben really quick.
Yep.
And then he ran out.
Okay. And, like, she was already in the car.
Yes.
So she had left the house, and she was, like, sounded like she was already driving, and he had, like, run and catch up to the car. And then they both got out of there and went back to their house, and were like, oh, yeah, we watched The Departed, and we're asleep the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was that's the gist of it. Now, I don't understand how they didn't find out about him buying fucking bullets at Walmart.
I think he paid in cash.
Okay.
So that would be, you would think that there would be footage of that.
Yeah, but you don't think they check any? I don't know.
You know, if they have the 7-Eleven footage and they show him like, you know, like getting cash at 7-Eleven, like, I think he got $40 worth of cash. I have no idea how much bullets cost, first of all.
No, I don't
know. I have no idea.
But you know what I mean? Why the fuck would they not? Like, it seemed like such an...
Check him for a receipt?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, or just like, yeah, can I pull all the closest gun shops? Like, whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, what? Where did he go from there? Like, you know what I mean?
And so, like, he bought gloves. He bought, like, they were careful about it. Like, he didn't want gun residue on his hands, so he bought gloves to go along with his shotgun shells.
So, and then, like you said, he pleads guilty. He gets life without parole.
Yeah. So that was, you know, this is weird to say, but like when you watch him be interviewed and he does seem remorseful, and he was like a child from a broken home. I don't know, like, he shouldn't be out, but like you watch him and it's like Don really kind of manipulated him.
Yeah.
And like he should serve his time, and and all of that. And he's obviously like a horrible, horrible person, especially, you know, in that moment. But it's just no parole, no hope of parole seemed, you know, like it's almost like he seemed like the way he talks and talked about the night. It's almost like he's a minor. And even though he's 21, but he sounds like a minor.
Yeah.
So.
And you could watch this. It's all on Dateline. Mm-hmm. It was an episode from last year.
How about the daughter? The six-year-old.
That was pretty crazy, too.
Yeah. So the daughter, right before like they hear his, I think they're sentencing him.
Yes.
She walks up. She's like, I want to speak to him. I want to speak to James. And they're like, okay. And somehow they allow a seven-year-old to just go ahead and speak to the guy who just murdered her father. And she's just like, hey, I forgive you. And it was like, wow. So now I think she was 8 or 9 at the time, but... Mm-hmm. That was like really, to me, like an incredible, like jaw dropping to have like that moment as a 9-year-old to have like that kind of compassion and forgiveness for the guy who murdered your father is really quite remarkable.
Yeah. And then the issue is obviously they caught a lot of heat because they made a deal with the ex-wife and Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
So she never went away. So everyone's like, well, what the fuck? Like, she was obviously a co-conspirator here. Like, why would you do that? Well, you kind of jumped the gun. They're like, hey, if she doesn't say anything, then we don't get this guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you understand kind of. But then, of course, this lady continues to go out and be a piece of shit.
Yeah, to the point that she lost custody of that daughter again.
Because she was having her fucking funnel drugs for her.
Yeah.
So, the daughter was under 18 and, you know, having, so.
Right.
I mean, obviously, she's not a very good person.
Not, like, a horrible person.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and like you said, yeah, like, she legally, like, they never questioned James before they gave her immunity. So that could, you know, like, I'm not an expert, but maybe you want to bring him in and get his side. And it kind of just, maybe it's just because it's a he said, she said, they have to have her statement in order to get him. But it seems like maybe you should have at least talked to him, maybe get both of them. Because if she's driving the getaway car, she's a murderer. Yeah. Like that, I think that, I'm pretty sure, again, we'd have to get Balot, and I think he's talked about that when he was in here, being like, if you're driving the getaway car, they charge you with like same crime, basically.
Yeah, it's just a different degree, I believe, or something like that. But yeah, that's pretty much the case. Like I said, if you want to go check it out, it was a Dateline episode. Forgot what the title of it was. I think I texted it to you. And then you
it
know,
was While They Were Sleeping.
While They Were Sleeping. Mm-hmm. So if you want to go check that out, there's that. Or you could just do your Googles, you know.
Yeah.
Ben Oxley, OXLEY.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's it. Chief, thanks. Thanks for joining me.
Of course.
That's it for today, everybody. That's it for this week. We will catch you all on Monday.